Blog Talk Radio.
BYGP family and guests, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. My name is Ashley Goodman, and I will be hosting tonight's BYGP Locker Room Show. We are fortunate to have Mr. Lawrence Jackson, a.k.a. LJ or Low Jack, joining us tonight and speaking about his journey as a rising athlete and giving some advice to help you young aspiring football players to achieve your own goals for playing big-time ball one day, and to find success both on and off the field. At any point, if you guys do have questions, please don't hesitate. Call in and ask away your questions to Lawrence, and we'll get you on as soon as we can. So we are going to patch Lawrence in. Hey, Lawrence.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. So where did the nickname LoJack come from?
You know, it kind of came during college. A guy named Petros Papadakis gave it to me. He's an announcer. He works for Fox Sports now. I think, you know, primarily just, you know, the first two letters of my name kind of how it sounds, but it kind of turned into, you know, LoJack, quarterback seeker, you know, that type of thing, because I was getting a lot of sacks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I like it. I definitely really, really like it. So for those of you who do not know, or I've talked to you a little bit about, you know, BYGP and what we actually do, but we represent and we try to mentor 13 to 19-year-old football players and help them, you know, understand the business of football and really the choices that you make off the field can, you know, hurt you on the field as well. And so we're just trying to educate our young athletes, and you're here, you know, to talk to them. You've lived it. So we definitely appreciate you coming on and giving us your time. So where did you grow up at, Lawrence?
Inglewood, California.
Inglewood. Okay, so you are, and you're in California, correct? Right? You live in California right now.
Okay. Yeah, in LA, downtown.
Okay. So then, whose decision was it to get you involved with football? Was it a parent? Was it yourself? Who got you involved?
It was my decision. I've been playing street ball as a kid, like most kids do. And in that, you know, I recognize that for basketball, my skill set was extremely limited. You know, not only was I not able to do what the little guys were able to do, I wasn't able to do what the big guys were able to do. But at flag football, I was able to do more than what the little guys were able to do, and the bigger guys weren't even close. And
I went to
the snow, my first time in the snow, and I tried to tackle a snowman, and I didn't know that, you know, compacted ice gets hard as a rock. And I tried to tackle the snowman thinking that I would, like, fly through it, you know, because Charlie Brown Christmas and stuff like that. And it was the first time, I say it was my first concussion, but it was the first real contact. Yeah, man, It jacked me up, but that was the time where I said, you know what, I think I like contact. I want to, you know, play tackle football.
Yeah. How old were you when you attacked the snowman?
I think I had to be going into fourth grade, maybe.
Okay.
Probably second
okay.
semester of third grade over the summer of fourth grade.
That snowman must have been definitely tough enough to knock you out.
Oh, it's the hardest hit that I've ever had.
That's funny. So then tell us, though, you are born in Inglewood. You grew up in Inglewood. Tell us a little bit about your background and growing up, your childhood.
You know, I was fortunate to have both parents at home. Both parents worked a typical 9-to-5, 40 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
My dad served in the military briefly, so he came with that discipline. They were very strict. There was a lot of rules just in terms of respecting others, not touching things that don't belong to you, following directions. And, you know, if you had a violation of any of those codes of conduct, you have to write, like, 2,000 standards or stand
oh,
in the
really?
Corner. Yeah, it was, you know, my dad was really tough. And, you know, obviously a lot of people have to be in before the street lights. But, you know, Inglewood is a dangerous area. So it's stuff like, you know, if you say you're going to be here, be there. And if, you know, it gets dark, you better be inside. But
yeah.
I think the biggest thing growing up is that my father's father passed away when he was a little boy, probably around like 8 or 10.
Uh-huh.
So having two boys of his own, he took fatherhood really serious. So that kind of set us up for success in terms of discipline, seeing an example like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So are you the baby or are you the oldest?
Yeah, I'm the baby. I'm the baby. My older brother, my older brother is a year and 8 months older. He too had a scholarship to Arizona, but he was a bounce back, so he got kicked out of school. He had trouble with, you know, drug use,
mm-hmm.
and you know, essentially like flunked out of school once he got back in with the drug stuff. You know, so he experienced that side of it as well. So having somebody that close to me experience the failure aspect of it and, you know, poor decisions and, you know, things like that, I definitely have, like, a close example.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that, yeah, that definitely would set a precedent for you. So then who would you, I mean, would you consider your parents to be your mentors as you, you know, as you grew up, or did you have other coaches, teachers?
You know, when I was growing up, I didn't really look at things in that way of, like, having a mentor or, you know, having somebody to look up to. Obviously, during, you know, my childhood, there were, you know, great football players for sure, but the spotlight was kind of, you know, basketball, obviously, with Michael Jordan and things like
absolutely.
That. So I didn't necessarily look up to one particular person or use them as an example of what I wanted to be. I kind of used life as my mentor. And became very observant in terms of seeing what other people were doing and what they were getting, the results they were getting, you know, with the effort that they was putting in. And that kind of shaped me. I learned, you know, they say you can learn something every single day, even if it's what not to do. And so life taught me a lot of what not to do by being observant of the people around me.
That's a fantastic way to approach it, and you know, it's a different way, but it definitely works. So then, if your parents were, you know, your dad was was very strict within rules and everything, were they big on education? Did they press that very hard on you and your brother?
Yeah, for me, my brother went to a private school his first few years of high school. He had a different experience. It was a little bit more challenging, so they were a little bit more lenient on him with his grades. But for me, being in public school, I couldn't bring home anything. Like, I couldn't bring home a C. It had to be an A or a B. That definitely was a good thing. But my grandmother and my auntie, they're lifelong educators. They both taught for, like, 20 years. And my grandma, 30-plus. And so every time we'd see her, she would emphasize, you know, going to college and getting an education. And, you know, the biggest thing that she implored, because she was really the one that constantly harped about, you know, going to school, that the one thing that she would always say is, I've never met a person who was upset that they got a college degree, you know, and that
mm-hmm.
kind of, like, stuck
absolutely.
With me going through. And, you know, they say life is easier if you, you know, get that piece of paper, you just have more opportunities.
absolutely. And, you know, it's not to say that you're going to, you know, get into a field that's using your degree, but going through and doing the 4 or 5 years of getting the degree and discipline of achieving that, that's definitely a mark to show, you know, people that you have it, you know, in you to get it done. So then within that, if your brother went to a private school, why did he go to a private school and you go to a public school?
My brother played basketball because he was too big to play football and, like, you know, youth leagues and stuff like that, and he was always much taller. I mean, we're about the same height now, both 6'5", but it was probably like a 15-16-inch, you know, difference between us for a while. And so he got a lot of looks for basketball, and when he, you know, decided he didn't want to play basketball anymore, he checked into to Inglewood to play football there. You know.
And what position did your brother play?
Offensive line.
Oh, okay. Okay. And then were you still a defensive end in high school?
I played a lot of positions in high school. I played, you know, offensive lineman, specifically offensive guard, tight end, defensive end, linebacker, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. You definitely got around on field then.
Yeah, I got around.
So you guys both then attended Inglewood. Did that, you speak about, you know, looking at things around you, your environment, and things of what not to do. I mean, did you ever think that your environment would be a factor that wouldn't allow you to find success or something different than you had always seen within Inglewood, just because, you know, knowing Inglewood, there are some areas that aren't the best, but I mean, how did you react to that?
Well, you know, I decided that I wanted to be a professional football player at an early age. It was like, you know, something that resonated with me more than anything else at that time.
Yeah.
That's really the only thing, you know, that I saw pretty much from like fourth grade through high school, wanting to be a professional football player. I didn't know necessarily about the process of going to college and getting a scholarship and all that stuff until, you know, I got into high school, like 10th grade. But, like, coming from Inglewood, I never looked at it as, you know, having, like, lack, where I guess the circumstances that I grew up in, the way that I was able to overcome it, was that my parents never talked about race. You know, they never talked about, you know, black versus white, or, you know, we're black, you know, we don't have the same opportunities and things like that. So that kept my perspective open in terms of believing that I could achieve anything that I wanted if I put in the due diligence and if I had the ability, you know, because a lot of people, you know, you have a dream, but you have to be realistic with your dreams. You know, like, I had to shift my dreams while playing professional ball, where I wanted to be a Hall of Fame player, and I realized that that opportunity was slipping because of my circumstances, you know. So it's setting realistic goals, but, you know, I play, you know, with people who were in all types of stuff and surrounded by a lot of that stuff, but, you know, talking to some of my former teammates now, you know, they talk about going to parties after games, you know, drinking and stuff like that, and it's kind of like, on one hand, I don't have, you know, any memories of sharing those things because my dad always had us in the house and, you know, getting home safely and things like that. But on the other hand, those same guys, you know, when they look at me, they're like, man, I wish that, you know, I would have been as focused as you were.
Absolutely.
Because, like, now the tables are turning. Like, they were cool in high school, but now they're, you know, not able to do what they want or be, like, quote-unquote cool now because they, you know, spend all their cool coins trying to be cool in high school. But it's, you know, for me, it was, you know, staying true to myself and knowing what I wanted. And, you know, also a quick side note, I had a lot of social issues where I wasn't, like, fully accepted because I didn't have, like, the cool clothes. I wasn't necessarily, like, the cute kid, things like that. So early on, I was rejected by, like, my peers. So it was easy for me in high school to reject my peers in the sense of, like, their approval. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, now I'm successful, and you guys all want to be, like, my friend and stuff like that. Cool, like, I get it. I'll soak that in. But at the same time, like, I have a purpose and I have an objective, and it you know, it's bigger than any of you guys. So I never sacrificed my path to be cool or to fit in with anybody. And that's how I think that I got free of, you know, all the pitfalls and things like that that come with being from the hood.
That's absolutely great, great advice right there. For everyone listening, what Lawrence had just said is really profound in the sense that, you know, sometimes you guys are not going to feel accepted, but really staying true to what, you know, your focus is, your beliefs, and doing what you feel is right for yourself, not what others are believing, that is very key. And thank you, Lawrence, for sharing that. For you, you had a lot of success in high school as an athlete. Did you ever feel that, you know, there was outside pressure or family members, friends pushing you more than you were pushing yourself?
No, not at all. I mean, for me, my family was pretty much unaware of the potential that both me and my brother had, primarily with our measurables, our height and our size and the way we were able to move. The coaches saw tremendous opportunity, but my parents didn't know about, you know, how, like, the process of going to the NFL or going to college from high school and how rigorous it is in terms of getting tape and getting seen and things like that. So, you know, I think that as my career grew, you know, even through college, there wasn't much pressure, you know, from my parents because they didn't really know, you know, to that level of what's going on. Like, I'm sure, you know, I think that my dad, you know, his goal was once he realized that we could be drafted, you know, to do everything in his power to make sure, you know, that happened. But it wasn't any, you know, pressure from anybody. You know, the main thing was, you know, for my mom was being a good person, you know, being nice to everybody on your way up because you never know who you got to, you know, talk to on your way down. And my dad was always about, you know, making sure you handle your grades. He didn't really, like, he cared about, you know, football because it's, like, cool to talk about, like, especially once we got into, like, the papers and became, like,
recognized
local, standout athletes. It became, like, more cool for them, but it was never, you know, I never felt any pressure, you know, to play or do anything for my parents.
Well, that's great that you didn't have that pressure and it was, you know, up to you. You loved it. You did everything possible to be good at it. So that is very, very good. With what did you feel that your academics being in Inglewood, did you feel that you would be prepared to go and attend a university academically?
Well, I mean, so I'll answer like this. Was I prepared? Not at all. Did I think about it in high school? No.
Okay. And why were you not prepared?
I mean, once I graduated from high school, I probably read like 3 or 4 books, you know, really handwriting papers, typing papers, you know, like plagiarizing, like, you know, creatively plagiarizing, as they call it, where you take the stuff out of the book. And, you know, it's like the teachers know, but they don't really care type of deal. So, like, once I got to college, you know, I've always been a smart kid. I took it's a APPI. It's kind of like an advanced placement program, but it's not AP. So I've always been a good student, you know, but I never really been challenged. So once I got to college, I was challenged. And when I became challenged, I realized that, like, I hadn't developed, quote, unquote, the muscle system to, you know, overcome that challenge. Where, like, in football, right, in the fourth quarter, 2 minutes left, you know, the game is tied, you're going down to score, you're ready for that situation because you've been training for it. Like, I was ready to be challenged by school. So I had to drop, you know, a couple of classes. Like, there was one class, a geography class, where you had to, like, make a map and all that stuff of, like, a landscape through a computer program. But, you know, I dropped my typing class, like, the first week of the class. So I didn't really, like, actively use computers like that. In the main class, I realized that I needed to, like, really, like, buckle down and get to work was a psychology class, the intro to psych. And they term it the weed out class. And you have to read, you know, in like kind of like a social studies book that's like 13 inches tall, kind of like probably 3 inches thick, you have to read like 25, 30 pages of that, and then like half of a paperback book, you know, in 1 week. And I just couldn't do it because I didn't have that skill set. So, you know, I dropped the class, and then I had a development class that they put like low test score freshmen in, or people who didn't perform at an elite level academically. And then it teaches you how to learn, you know, how to take notes, how, you know, how to do everything. So once I got that, then, you know, the SOSSR that Amber and those Tutelevi teach, I was in that class, and that's how I've been, you know, essentially I came to speak at the thing, and that helped me tremendously, because it wasn't that I wasn't capable, it was that I wasn't prepared and I didn't have the skill set.
Absolutely.
And once you, you know, once you get there and you get the tutors and you actually, like, try, that's half the battle, is trying, you know, sitting in a place where the teachers respect that you respect the academic environment, because athletes, the teachers know, like, hey, they're on scholarship, they're here to, like, play sports. Most of them are, like, athletes who don't know much, you know, at school, aren't good students, so they're already expecting you to fail. So if you, you know, show up, you know, be attentive, ask questions in class, you know, in your TA sessions, I mean, the breakout sessions, ask questions, things like that. On a teacher's radar, you become a person. You don't, you're not an athlete that's in a class.
Absolutely.
You're now a student. And
well,
so,
yeah,
like, once I – go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, because once they see that you're actually putting, you know, forth effort, they're going to put as much effort that you put in as well.
Right. I mean, this is the thing. Like, the athletes don't understand. The teachers are willing to help athletes.
Yeah.
At a greater level, and they'll never say it in front of regular students, but at a greater level than regular students, and it's because of multiple reasons. If you look at it, when I was at SC, right, our football team is responsible for a lot of the donations and things like that that built the campus to where it is now.
Yeah.
So it brings money in, you know, for a lot of stuff. So if you care and you show you care, they're like, hey, you know, this athlete is different. You know, I'm going to help him out. Like, he's coming, he's showing up. And that the one phrase that really I stood to, when I met any teachers or, like, talked to anybody on campus, it was knowing, okay, that these people are important and that I already come in with a stigma of being an athlete.
Yeah,
exactly. So how can I create my experience on them knowing that I'm not the normal athlete? Once you get put in the category of outside of status quo, outside of the normal athlete, then life is a lot easier.
Exactly, exactly. And you're going to get a whole lot more of opportunities, guys. It's just one of those things that you put in the effort, and people are willing to help you with that. So you did go to USC. Now, what was the reason for when you were going through recruiting and trying to decide where you would end up playing ball? What was about SC that made you choose to go there?
Well, first and foremost, wherever you go to school at, it's a business decision. You know, you love the game and all that stuff, but reality is you're entering into big business. And so knowing that, I had to kind of look at it as – break it down into different components that are going to make me, you know, not only a great athlete, but give me the best situation to live a good life after sports. So several of the coaches that were on staff, the strength coach came from Tennessee, and Tennessee was a school that I was close to going to. The D-line coach came from Miami. Pete Carroll came from the NFL. You know, so it's like, if I'm going to school and I want to go to the NFL, I want somebody who has experience there that knows how to get me there. I want a coach that has experience getting guys there in my position. And, you know, I knew that I wanted to stay in Southern California. Like, I'm, you know, born and raised in L.A., don't plan on leaving. And if I'm going to be in L.A., why not have the most powerful degree? You know, why not, you know, be at home and build, you know, a legacy for myself? But the main thing for me was that, you know, when you go away to a college, oftentimes you don't think about the possibility of getting hurt. But there was a guy who came to SC from Florida who couldn't play after his second year because of concussions. So here he is, you know, 3,000 miles away from home in his support system, you know, where he was there, like the sacrifice was for football. Now you're not making a sacrifice for football anymore. So, like, people get unmotivated. They move back home. Things fall apart. So if I was ever to get hurt, it's like, yo, like, I'd rather be hurt at home. You know what I mean? And be able to go to school but be able to still live a life off the field.
Well, and you have, you know, the support system from your families, from your, you know, friends. So you are closer to home. But do you feel that, you know, your experience of staying closer, do you feel like you grew enough as an individual, or do you feel like if maybe you took that step to going out of state and you've been playing further, do you think that would have, you know, changed anything at all?
You know, I do think that it would have changed things in terms of, like, developing more of a personal responsibility and having – because really when you go out of state, it's a sense of detachment. You detach from everything that you know. So you have to get used to new things. And so I didn't get that. The first time that I had that was when I got drafted to Seattle. So here I am, you know, pro athlete, now living on my own for the first time, being away from my family and stuff for the first time. So I had to get used to that. But for me, that development is going to come no matter what. And I try my best to, because I was at home, I still did not maintain that same lifestyle that I had in terms of constantly hanging with my friends, you know, having those guys up there. Like, they came to hang out and party and stuff like that, but, you know, it was pretty much, like, all business. Like, I would go home to, like, visit, but I wasn't going home, like, every weekend. I still tried to treat it as if I were away at college.
Yeah.
But,
uh-huh.
you know, I did still have the safety net of having everybody around. But if you know, some of my other friends, you know, when we talk about it, going off to college was one of the best things that they could have done. But it depends on, in my opinion, what type of person you are. If you're that type of person where you know that you're not that disciplined, you know that you're running with the wrong crowd, you know you're doing stuff that you're not supposed to be doing, and college is the only opportunity to pull you out of that, then, yeah, I would say go out of state if you're not strong enough to separate. But I was strong enough to separate from all that stuff and maintain focus and discipline, still being at home, still being independent, but still having that support system.
Well, since you had been doing it all through, you know, pretty much your younger years as well, so you knew, you know, going to SC and staying closer, that wasn't going to be a factor of making poor decisions. So within on the field, I mean, you pretty much balled out as a four-year starter. And so, you know, I told you last night, I said, wow, you were, like, really legit. So within that, I mean, was there any factors of – right when you stepped on campus, were you just, like, pure gold, or was there any struggles within, you know, developing on the field, any struggles within coaching? You know, talk to us about, you know, your time on the field.
So I was the number two defensive end in the country when I came out, the number one true defensive end. The other guy was Lamar Willie, who was like an outside linebacker that they felt would be converted to a defensive end. So I couldn't win pretty much anywhere, you know, in the country. I didn't, you know, get offers from, like, Stanford and Notre Dame and, you know, the uppity schools like that. But uppity in a sense of, like, you know, academic standards and things like that. But
no need to explain. We know.
So for me, I lost my train of thought. What was the question again? So I hurt my ankle really bad in high school, like I mentioned at the symposium. So I was going in, I hurt my ankle in May, and I walked across the stage in the cast in June. I got out of the cast kind of like in the end of June, was doing a little rehab early July. They wanted me to gray shirt, which for you guys that are listening that don't know, it's gray shirting is when you don't come in the fall, but they bring you in the spring. So they open up a scholarship in the fall, but like some of the seniors that are leaving, that scholarship opens up in the spring. So they wanted me to do that, and I'm like, no, like I don't want to do that. So, like, I went through all the practices and things. Let me tell you, to get clear, high ankle sprain, they were talking about putting a screw in it.
Yeah.
To clear me for football activity, they told me to jump on my toes, my tiptoes, and I jumped on, like, the ball of my feet. So I didn't use, like,
both
any of my
ligaments.
Both of them
are just your injured one.
Just the hurt one. Yeah, just the
okay.
injured one, and they cleared me. And that first year was the most miserable experience that I've had playing football. Contemplated quitting every day. Called my mom
really?
All the time. Talked to the trainer all the time, like, yo, like, something's wrong, blah, 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 like, it's not right. Like, literally, it was so bad where if somebody ran up to me with a gun behind me, I couldn't run. After, like,
really?
Stuff like that, it was just, yeah, it was constantly inflamed, constantly sore. So going from the number one defensive end in the country to being hurt and going on service team and, like, having a red shirt and having to deal with people thinking, like, oh, he's not as good as we, you know, we thought. I had to deal with that freshman year, but it turned me stronger because I got service team defensive player of the year award, which is the scout team, hurt. I knew I needed surgery after the season. I could have got it during the season, but I didn't want to, like, you know, leave my teammates out to dry. And it's like, that's another key point. Like, even the smallest thing on being a service team player, we won the national championship that year. And I feel like going against that offense every single day, you know, got me better as an athlete, on top of the fact that I was hurt. So I had to use other things, you know, to get the job done because I was missing what I was, you know, able to do. I wasn't able to move and run. So I kind of got, like, had to revamp myself, and they were looking for other guys. And, you know, the opportunity came the next year where I was a redshirt freshman, and I had gotten surgery on my ankle, so I was back to where I was in high school. And things started to, like, pick up. Then I ended up, you know, one guy ended up getting, like, hurt, missed practice, and they had to shuffle the lineup. Then I got bumped from a 2 to a 1, and I was doing so good that they couldn't take me out. But it was like I was ready for my opportunity because my mindset was always like, I'm the starter, just I'm not starting right now. So once I got the opportunity, I didn't look back. And even, you know, one of the things that Coach Carroll said in the paper was that, you know, we stuck him in there. We didn't really know what to expect, but, you know, he kept getting better, kept making plays, and it's one of those things where you can't take him out type of deal. So
yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you got your opportunity, you balled out, and then pretty much, you know, the rest is history. You were second team All-American in 2007, two times first team All-Pac-12 in 05 and 07, and then second team All-Pac-10 in 06. So, yeah, I would say you pretty much, you know, covered your injuries and took charge on when you were on the field. So that is fantastic. Now, you spoke when I met you at the event a couple weeks ago, and you were talking about the day-to-day operations of, you know, going to class and the time commitments of, you know, a 30-minute period. You had to shower, eat, and run to your class. Now, tell us, tell our audience about the operation of a day-to-day as a student athlete.
Well, let me start off first by saying that, like, you know, if you guys are, you know, on the way to going to college and things like that, you know, student athlete or just student, you have to understand that the demands that are being placed on you right now are in no way comparable to what's going to be placed on you in college. Everything that I knew went out the window. You know, like, you have to essentially become an adult. You have to manage your time.
Absolutely.
You know, you have to, you know, set time aside. You have to be aware. If you just, you know, show up from one thing to the other, you're going to be on, you know, the rat race, and you're never going to catch up, and you're going to feel overwhelmed and feel like you're drowning and things like that. So the quicker you're able to say, you know what, I'm going to be tired, it's going to suck, you know, I'm not going to be, you know, happy, it's going to suck, but, you know, this is my schedule. If you got to wake up at 8, you know, or you got a class at 8, you got to wake up. You have to.
Yeah.
You know, it all, like, means something. And, you know, it's the working out, the going to class, the coaches. So not only – you know, it's like it's multi-layer, right? You have to, not only do you have to impress your strength coaches because they report back to the coaches, so you have to work out hard, so you have to be prepared to work out, and then you have to impress your teacher so you can get a good grade, so you can continue to play football, but you also have to impress your coaches on the field. That's a lot of demands for somebody coming out of high school who didn't know or have any idea that this is like big business, you know. So when you get there, you have to understand all of those dynamics, and you have to break them down like piece by piece. And one thing that, you know, my girlfriend in college, she came from a very good school where it was like 98% college graduation or college attendance rate. So her roommate, the first thing that she did when she got to got her classes, she from her house, she walked from her house to each one of her classes to see how long it would take her to walk to her classes. So in her mind, she knew, okay, it's going to take me 10 minutes to walk to class at a leisurely pace, but if I'm late, I could get there in 6 minutes. You know, it's little stuff like that that, you know, helps you, you know, get ahead. But even, you know, planning, you know, you don't want to work out and not have a plan on what you're going to do when you get to class, right, where you're running around, you get to class, the normal students are sitting there, they're not sweating, you got, you know, you just got out of a hot shower, you just finished working out, you just ate, you're rushing to get there, you're pouring sweat, you're not really recovered from the workout, and you have to do all that stuff and still, like, you know, get going in class and not be a distraction. It's tough,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah, it is. No, I completely agree. And a point that you did make is planning, guys. That's key for success. You do not go on the field with, you know, no game plan. It's the same as a day-to-day operation. So, you know, Lawrence is talking about timing himself from, you know, one point to, you know, another point and seeing how long that's taking and where everything is going. And if it does help, we spoke about this last week, making a list, if that does help you guys, you know, writing things down, making sure that you're covering everything, and do that the night before or the morning of, and, you know, find ways that are going to make you successful within your day-to-day, you know, life. So then,
let me add one thing to that.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, I want to take the veil off to let you guys know that, you know, I deal with some of the same stuff you guys deal with, laziness, procrastination, you know, not doing stuff when you need to. You know, I still do some of those things, you know, in my life, but when something is important, all that stuff goes out the side, you know, all of it out the window. It's like you got to get it done, and when you got to get something done, it doesn't matter what it takes, just get it done, you know.
Exactly. And I've said this before, that you have to have more love and more passion for your goals than the hate that, you know, the things that you hate doing, and that's academics, that's lifting. If you hate lifting, that's eating right. So within that, you have to have the discipline to do the things that you ultimately do not like. So then after your, you know, your college days, you did get drafted first round. You were the fourth DE to go the first round, 28th pick in 2008. So tell us a little bit, and, you know, we spoke about this a little bit yesterday, but tell us, when that moment happened, everyone's ecstatic because it's a big moment to hear your name and to, you know, finally get your goal achieved. Tell us some things and how your life changed for the better and for the worse, because we always hear, you know, the amazing, the money, the life, everything of that nature, but tell us both sides.
Well, let me start with the worst. You know, I dealt with depression, was in a very dark place pretty much my entire career. You know, I had suicidal thoughts at times, just like completely unhappy. And that happened because I was so committed to football, where football was my son, right? Like my source of energy. It was the only thing that I really cared about. And it was a carrot. And so I wasn't, you know, interested in other things. I really wasn't interested in, like, developing myself, you know, socially and, you know, things like that. And so once I got to the league, it was like, okay, on one hand, the journey is over. The journey to get here, it's another journey. So when I got there, it wasn't what I thought it was. You know what I mean? It was way more business oriented or oriented than college. You know, it was way more stressful, way more complex, you know, way more pressure, way more uncertainty and things like that. And early on, I didn't cope well, you know, and then I got traded. And that kind of like shattered me because I felt like a failure, you know, and I had to process it and say, hey, you know, I wanted to get traded, things like that. But the concept of being traded, it's just like you didn't do what you were supposed to do, you know. So I had to like balance things out, you know, and keep, you know, perspective. But there are good things that come with it, given the right context. You know, like obviously the best thing is the money. Where at 28, you know, I consider myself semi-retired, where I don't have to wake up and go do something that, you know, I don't want to do. I get to choose, you know, what I do. If I go to the bookstore and I want to get, you know, some magazines, instead of saying, hey, you know, I only got 15 bucks, you know, I could get one magazine and go to lunch, I could buy 10 magazines and, like, really, like, nurture myself. So the good part is, you know, being able to experience life through being compensated for something like that. But the main thing is, you know, the good part is knowing that I could achieve something, right, where I committed to this and I've been doing it up until that point about 10 years. And it's like, okay, if I put my mind to something, I could get it done. Now, once I got to the NFL, the thoughts that I had for myself, the vision, the dreams, all that got blown up. It wasn't what I thought it was. You know, I got bad circumstances. I wasn't able to, you know, be who I wanted to be as a player. I wasn't getting put in the right situations. I was being called a bust, different things like that. So, like, you know, that stuff played into, like, the worst part of it. But, I mean, just the fact that there's nothing, and even in the NFL, there were days where I woke up and I'm like, you know what? Like, what am I doing? Like, I hate this, you know, but you find a way to keep going because you got to get it done. But it was the fun part is doing something that you love, you know, being able to be 1%, the top 1% of somebody in the world that could do something. But just having that, you know, those experiences and developing the relationships with, you know, different guys, and really the best part of everything is that it taught me humility, where in college – I was always the best guy. When I got to the NFL, there were guys bigger, stronger, faster, way more explosive, things like that. You know, I'm friends with Ndamukong Suh, lockers close to Calvin Johnson. You know, you're seeing these freakishly talented guys, and it's like, you know, hey, like, I'm not as good as I thought I was, you know.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
And in that, I have a thing where I tell people, like, I left my legacy on the table in terms of, there's things that I didn't do in high school, like squatting and power clean, even in college where I wasn't committed to that. In the NFL, when it came to rely on the stuff that I had in the bank, I didn't have any money in the bank. You know, I didn't have that, you know, work, you know, to do all that extra stuff. And that was the difference, you know, for me.
Exactly.
So walking away, it's like, you know, I had a great college career, subpar NFL career, despite the circumstances. You know, I performed well in my circumstances, but the big picture wasn't, you know, it's not anything to necessarily brag about, you know what I mean? But it taught me that, like, A, everything doesn't unfold the way you want it to unfold. B, you can learn something from any situation. And C, I look at it in hindsight as the NFL was my training camp for life. So moving forward to life, there's only few people out there. You know, you got military people, you got doctors, that they can say that they had gone through something as rigorous as this, where life is now easy. You know, the happiness part is hard, but, like, just getting through life, you develop a system of operation.
Exactly. So, Lawrence, one more question to wrap this up, and I would like to ask, what's one thing you hope young football players gather from your journey and in your life? What would be the one, you know, the one thing that you would like them to get from your experience?
So I know you said one thing, but I'll go two things. One, athletically and one personally. You know, athletically, you know, work hard. You never know when that, you know, extra gasser or that moment when you're like, you know what, I could go harder, but I really don't feel like it, go harder. at that moment, because that's all you have. And you never know when that moment is going to come when you need that particular little bit of ounce of work that you put in 10 years ago. You never know when that's going to show up. But so work hard is the main thing, whether it's weight room, school, interacting with people. You never know what your work is going to turn into. For me, I know what my work didn't turn into, and it was a successful NFL career the way I wanted to. But it's personal. Find something else. Sports is not the end of the world. You know, for me, I'm 28. There's guys I play with, 22, the dream is over, right? You're not even a man yet. You know, you're just getting started. And, you know, pick up an instrument. You know, pick up a foreign language. You know, develop interest in things outside of football, because you're going to need a sense of happiness. And, you know, finding happiness is the key to everything in life. You know, every day you wake up, you should be grateful, because it's a conspiracy that we're even alive, you know, to have the opportunity to live in. And if you're not happy, you don't have any fuel for your car to get where you need to go. You can show up places, but at some point you're going to look back and you're like, you know, I was doing all this stuff, but I wasn't happy. You know, everybody's not going to be first-round pick, second-round pick. Everybody's not going to get drafted. Everybody's not going to get money. You're doing it because it makes you happy. You know, like find the happiness in it. Enjoy the moment, because that's all you have.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Lawrence, and we will definitely have more coming in the future, because we definitely want to bring you on. You did warn me that you do like to speak, and you did just that. So we definitely will have you back on to cover some more topics and to, you know, hit the ground running and try to educate these young athletes and parents and coaches out there. So I want to thank you again for your time, and we will speak soon.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you guys for tuning in tonight. We hope you guys got, you know, a lot out of that show. We felt, you know, when I spoke to Lawrence, he had some great advice when I met with him, and I thought we definitely needed to bring him on. And there's so much great things going on with BYGP right now. So please check us out on www.beforeyougopro.com. And if you have not checked out our book, our new Before You Go Pro book, definitely check that out. This Thursday, in 2 days, guys, we're going to be speaking with Coach Keith Belton, who is one of my good friends. He's an assistant strength and conditioning coach at USC for football. Great guy. He definitely knows his stuff. That show starts at 6:30 p.m. PT. This is Ashley Goodman signing off for BYGP and the rest of the BYGP team. Stay hungry and passionate for your dreams. Have a good night.